Danielle Anders, a community member who grew up in Mantua.
Whenever men and women straighten their backs up, they're going somewhere. Because a man can't ride your back unless it's bent. Dr. Martin Luther King. I like to think that when we straighten our backs up, no one can keep us down. Growing up, I felt safe. I felt heard. Maybe not seen, because I often felt overlooked. But I could talk up a storm. I had a teacher who especially loved to hear me talk. She was like a grandmother figure who felt we all belonged. And it was important because in the inner city, you don't always know if you belong. Before class started, she'd bring up a chair and have me sit down at her desk and tell her stories about the happenings of my house. Those stories tickled her so. She especially loved the story I told about my grandmother, my siblings, and the prunes. In my house, there wasn't much money, and snacks were rationed. I remember realizing how many people lived in our house by how many tasty cakes were gone when each of us were only allowed to have one apiece. We all knew to only eat our portion. One day, my grandmother made her famous prunes, and she noticed that before she was ready, someone had eaten all of them. She tried to get us to admit who had eaten the prunes, but no one would. So my grandmother decided she would find out, and we went about our day as usual. That night, my grandmother took off her belt and went upstairs to sleep in the tub. She waited and waited. Finally, the person who had eaten the prunes needed to use the bathroom urgently. And there, my grandmother, lying in the bathroom, took her belt and gave them a beating. My teacher loved that story. With her delight, she was helping young girls like me navigate the hardships around us. I now believe she allowed herself to be used by God. I had my first glimpse of someone dying when I was 9. I was knocking on the front door of my friend Keith's house when a black car with tinted windows roared down the street, screeching to a stop. A man began shooting out of the window. Startled, I blinked my eyes shut. When I opened them, 2 guys were lying on the sidewalk, bleeding out. They were dressed nice, gold jewelry. One had blood pouring out of his neck as he looked up at the sky. The other looked scared, as if he were trying to catch his last breath. Shortly after, neighbors began screaming, and there was a huge commotion. The ambulance came, and they put one of the guys on a stretcher. I remember his body looked lifeless. As they sped off, I looked down at the sidewalk. It was full of blood. I never told my parents what I'd seen. I was afraid if they knew, they'd keep me from going out to play. So I wore a mask and held the fear and memories inside. But seeing violence up close and personal damaged my innocence. I still carry that vivid memory 25 years later. People were killed and shot in close proximity to my house my whole life. Our trauma is so overloaded that it's exhausting. It makes you numb. Who cares? There are 5 to 10 other people on your block with the same trauma. When I was 12, I discovered basketball. My friends became enamored with guns, but I found greater feelings and associations with basketball. The bouncing sound helped me reduce the memory and sounds of gunshots. I think I drove my mom crazy dribbling. But the sound of the ball going in the basket felt good. I was good at it. My cousin Cedric loved basketball too. We were born just days apart, and ever since we were little, we played together every day. I was a tomboy and followed him in adventures, telling our brothers on our bikes, sneaking out of the house, playing rough on the court. He treated me like one of the boys, and he paved the path for me to be accepted as equal to them. But starting at 14, we moved in different directions. I had basketball, but Cedric started getting into dirt bikes and video games. Then when he was 17, his grandmother passed away and left him her house. A lot of people were jealous of his new prosperity. One day, one of his friends stole his PlayStation. Cedric confronted him, but as he was walking away, the friend took out a gun and shot him in the back. I heard the shots from the next street over. Cedric's brother started yelling at the top of his lungs for my aunt. It was like I was 9 years old all over again. I ran to where Cedric was lying on the ground. My aunt was screaming to call 911. As she tried to pick him up, I knelt down and grabbed his hand. I wish I could go back and give him more love. At 14, I just didn't know what to say. The ambulance felt like it took forever. It was a Saturday at the end of the school year. It was just starting to get warm. And my aunt gently said to him, "You'll be all right. They're coming. Hold on." I tried to hold his hand so he knew that I was with him. But I couldn't say goodbye. I just didn't know how. When the ambulance arrived, I didn't want to let go of his hand. My aunt rode with him and told me to stay in the house with my cousins and try to comfort them. We were all in shock. I couldn't believe what had just happened. I was so angry and traumatized. It was early May, and by that July, their dad was murdered too. Later, Cedric's younger brother lost his mind. None of us ever really recovered. They caught the friend who murdered him, and he was given 25 to life over a PlayStation. Basketball saved me. Sometimes I felt it was all I had to get away from the violence and the memories. I repressed the grief, and I obsessively threw myself into the game. My friends were just starting to get caught up in the streets, armed robberies, gambling, using drugs, selling drugs, working this lifestyle so opposite of what we had once been into. We all had uncles, cousins, fathers, brothers, lost to gun violence. I became mean on the court, angry and aggressive, but I kept winning. And everyone was proud of me. When the memories of Cedric losing his life started to overwhelm me, I learned to use focus and visualizations. I'd imagine running up the court, picturing the ball going in the net. Then I'd consciously replace the memories of him dying on the street that afternoon with seeing myself run up and down the court, eventually picturing myself winning the championship game. I've taken basketball to the highest places. In Philadelphia's public league, we had 100 straight wins, and I became one of the city's basketball stars. After going to a historically black college, I earned a professional contract, one of only four awarded out of 500 contestants. I played professionally in Portugal for 2 years. Basketball took me around the world. Everywhere I go, I carry Cedric with me, winning for both of us. I want us to all remember that we're capable of winning.
I think that African Americans in particular are facing such a myriad of hardships
And feeling lost and feeling betrayed. I was at a point where I felt like no one outside of my race cared at all about any of the hardships, the trauma from the gun violence, the trauma from the police killings, the trauma of poverty. Just felt like everyone was just so apathetic. And assistance of my coworker, Mr. Mike, has been such a blessing. He is Filipino. 1 week we had come into work in early February, and Mr. Mike wasn't there. I found that Mr. Mike had been very ill on his deathbed with COVID. And when I let him know that he had been in my prayers, I believe he really felt it. And he said, "I'm a licensed pilot, and it's a very tight network of people who all look the same and come from the same backgrounds. And it has been very hard for me to get my foot in the door, but I want to open the door wider for other people. And I think that you would be great for this opportunity." Mr. Mike set me up with friends of his, and the goal is for me to obtain my commercial pilot's license. I ran toward it with all of my gusto, and it has been more rewarding than I could have ever experienced or imagined. That first flight, private lesson as it's called, was also terrifying. That initial takeoff was exhilarating because I could truly get a feel of how fast we needed to go for the airplane to be able to lift off of the ground. And it was a great first trip. Recently, in my grandmother's house, my aunt took down a picture that had been hanging there for years. And behind that picture, she found a handwritten prayer that has been a staple in my life. "O Lord, that you would bless us indeed and enlarge our territory, that your hand would be with us, and that you would keep us from evil, that we may not cause pain." And this opportunity to fly airplanes was another manifestation and answered prayer that my territory would be enlarged. I remember feeling like a veil had come from my eyes when I was about 13, walking through my neighborhood, and I noticed the trash all over the ground. I noticed the woman who always sat on the corner on the ground with her cup. I noticed the kids running by with the shoes untied that looked dirty and worn. And I remember feeling this sense of despair and feeling so stuck in a rut of filth. Being able to get into that airplane and fly has given me a perspective and a visual of what it means to go higher. It's really empowered me and given me a sense of purpose to help other children from my neighborhood be able to experience all of the opportunities, all of the perspectives that are outside of our neighborhood and outside of our trauma. And because these doors were opened for me, I'm even more certain that they will be opened for those who are coming behind me. And I'm grateful that I now feel it's my purpose to help them also see that this is possible. I am Danielle, the resilient one.
Addressing Community Trauma, Real Stories from the Bottom to the Top Project is produced by Mount Vernon Manor Community Development Corporation, the West Philadelphia Promise Zone, in the National Endowment for the Arts. Producer, Donna Griffin. Artistic Direction, Taya Sepinuk. Police and Trauma Consultant, Altavis Love Craighead. Music, Brian Caselli Jordan and Nimrod Speaks. Audio Engineering, Mike Moore at Lil Drummer Boy. Through storytelling, this project aims to highlight trauma as a public health issue ahead of encouraging participation in community-based emotional support programming to support healthier and safer neighborhoods. Special thanks to our police and community storytellers, Brian, Danielle, George, Rashid, Rakia, Chante, and Trey for courageously sharing their lived experiences.